Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast. I'm Keith Caulfield, Billboard's Senior Director of Charts.
And I'm Katie Atkinson, Billboard's Executive Digital Director, West Coast.
Hello, Katie.
Oh, hi, Keith.
How are you?
Doing quite well. Maybe a little sleepy. You know, long Grammy night this past weekend.
For once, we were not actually at the Grammy Awards.
Yeah, this whole Vegas thing.
Well, you and I weren't. Lots of Billboard people were.
Lots of Billboard people were, and we, of course, covered the absolute bejesus out of it, but we were not in Las Vegas.
Which, you know, actually was fine.
Totally fine.
It was fine. It all worked out. All that said, as always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop. Today on the show, we've got chart news on how Machine Gun Kelly lands his second number one on the Billboard 200 Albums chart, how Lotto's Big Energy hits the top 10 on the Billboard Hot 100 Songs chart, and how Daddy Yankee notches his highest charting album ever on the Billboard 200 with his first studio album in over a decade, Legendaddy.
Sounds like Barney from How I Met Your Mother named that. Did you ever watch that show?
No.
Okay. Well, if you did, you understand what I'm saying.
Okay.
Also on the show, we're talking all about the 2022 Grammy Awards and the winners in the coveted Big Four categories. Speaking of which, Olivia Rodrigo took home Best New Artist, but she got shut out of all the other big prizes. Why do we think that she didn't sweep, and what will her Grammy future look like? Stay tuned for our discussion on all that. Plus, Harry Styles released the brand new song As It Was last week, the first taste of his upcoming Harry's House album. What do we think of the new song and video, and where might it land on next week's charts? Oh, and who will join Harry and Billy in the desert now that Kanye West has dropped out as a Coachella headliner? We will talk about all this and more. It's a busy pop week, what can we say? But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
Okay, let's do the chart chat. First up, Machine Gun Kelly's mainstream sellout tops the Billboard 200 albums chart as the set enters atop the list with 93,000 equivalent album units earned in the United States of America in the week ending March 31st, according to Luminate, formerly MRC Data. It's the artist's second number one album following his last release, 2020's Tickets to My Downfall. All told, mainstream sellout is his sixth top 10 on the chart. Also, mainstream sellout is the first number one rock album on the Billboard 200 in over a year since AC/DC's Power Up spent a week at number one, debuting atop the list, dated November 28th, 2020. By the way, rock albums are defined as those that have hit Billboard's top rock albums chart, and you may have figured it out by now, but mainstream sellout is also number one on the top rock albums chart this week.
Sounds like MGK is officially a rock star.
Can't wait for that AC/DC MGK double bill.
Me either. Let's hold our breath until it happens.
All right. Well, next, staying with the Billboard 200, Daddy Yankee returns to the top 10 for the first time in nearly 15 years as a Legendaddy. Debuts at number 8.
That's fun to say.
His highest charting album ever and his second top 10. He previously hit the top 10 in June of 2007 with El Cartel, The Big Boss, which debuted and peaked at number 9. Now, the new 19-track Legend Daddy is Daddy Yankee's first studio album in nearly 10 years and has been described as his final studio release. Legend Daddy bows with 29,000 equivalent album units earned.
Yeah, I thought he had been threatening retirement. But, I mean, this dude is still so crazy successful. Like, where are you going, bro? Like, keep making music.
He's fine. Legend Daddy is also the highest charting Latin album and first top 10 on the Billboard 200 since Bad Bunny's El Último Tour del Mundo bowed at number one on the December 12th, 2020 dated chart and spent five non-consecutive weeks in the top 10.
And won for Best Musica Urbana album at the Grammys on Sunday.
You know who watched that pre-tell premiere ceremony from front to back? Why one Katie Atkinson?
That would have been my job on Sunday. So well, please quiz me. What won what award?
Well, don't worry. We'll do that. Lastly, over on the Hot 100 Songs chart, Wild Glass Animals' Heat Waves sits tied at number one for a fifth week. Lotto lands her first top 10 as Big Energy jolts 11-3. The song, which has been gaining for weeks, got a boost from a new remix with Mariah Carey and featuring DJ Khaled. On the remix, Carey sings a portion of her 1995 number one hit, Fantasy, and both songs interpolate Tom Tom Club's classic Genius of Love, which was a top 40 hit in 1982.
It's just like a Russian nesting doll of songs at this point.
whoever the songwriters were for Genius of Love is just rolling in money.
Just passively making money for the last 25 years. Beautiful.
Love it.
So moving on, Harry Styles released his brand new song As It Was last week, along with a new music video, and fans are already going crazy over both. Keith, have you listened and watched?
Yes, I watched it as soon as I got the press release and tuned into the video. I consumed the song by way of the music video.
Okay, I had a listen. I had a pure listen first and then a video watch. And I have to say I love both. You know, I had actually been talking with some of our coworkers last week about how Harry's lead singles, while great, have never been the best songs from the album. It's like Sign of the Times, great song, Lights Up, great song, but then went on to like have bigger hits and bigger poppy kind of songs off of the album.
What was the second single from Fine Line? Adore You?
No. Adore You's from... from Fine Line. I thought you were talking about his first album. From Fine Line, yeah, Adore You was the second. And then Watermelon Sugar, yeah.
I don't think the average person knows Lights Up.
Right. That's kind of the thing. But it's still like he plays it in his concert. It's a great song. But it's not like the one you remember from the album. So we were like, we were hedging our expectations for As It Was, knowing that it's going to be a good, solid Harry song.
What do they call it? A table setter?
Yes.
What's the phrase?
100%. Setting the table for Harry's house. That's appropriate. Setting the dining room table in Harry's house.
It's the welcome mat for Harry's house.
But then it turned out like it's a great song. If this is like the underwhelming song from this album, I am thrilled because it is a super fun song. It almost has like a Postal Service kind of vibe to it, like sort of bleep blippy.
I was hearing like synthy blips that reminded me of Take On Me.
Yes, 100%. Yes, I've heard that comparison too. Great comparison as well. It's just, it's one of those ones also that's got the kind of maybe sadder lyrics that belie the very like upbeat tone of the production, because the lyrics are much more about kind of like a failed relationship and trying to reclaim something that's lost in a relationship or finding yourself after a failed relationship, etc. Like there's just lots of, you know, kind of bummer of a theme, but then the song itself like will fit in like, you know, an iPhone commercial too, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yes. It's peppy and bubbly and oh, this is
it's
depressing.
Like, wait, what pills are you on, huh?
What do you mean? What just happened?
Why are you lying on the floor? And then the video is spectacular. Like, I think Harry is such a fun pop star because he is just like, I don't even know how to like phrase what I want to say.
Okay.
I think that, you know, somebody like Justin Bieber, for instance, like he's never really gone out on like a fashion limb like Harry has, maybe feeling like he needs to put up this like thing as like a heartthrob. Like he's only supposed to be like super, I don't know, super masculine or something. Whereas Harry's like wearing a spandex bodysuit in this and is is as much or more of a heartthrob than ever because of this spandex bodysuit. You know what I mean?
But it was, but...
That's Harry's personality, too, though.
You're more of a Harry expert than I am, but it feels like while Harry was in One Direction, there was a certain amount of conformity that you had to have for the image of the group.
Mm-hmm.
However, even then, he was clearly trying to establish himself as his own person.
Mm-hmm.
And making stylistic choices with what he wore and how his hair was done and mm-hmm. things like that. And also just his entire disposition and his personality. And everyone kind of knew that. So when his first album came out and he started to make moves, both in terms of just sonics and how he
aesthetics.
Presented himself, aesthetics, mm-hmm. it was already like, whoa, what's going on? And so
Coming from the boy band.
Yeah. And then... As we progressed to Fine Line and he was making choices through his videos and through photo shoots, he challenged people.
Yeah.
So now when we see him in a leotard or he...
It's not unexpected.
It's not unexpected.
Yeah.
And so bravo to him
yes.
for sort of conditioning us to not sort of think this is out of the ordinary.
This is what I'm saying. I feel like he's done, like he's like single-handedly done that. And my friend texted me when the video came out and said, it's like Justin Timberlake and Elton John had a baby. Like, that's such a great description because he's very much like the teen heartthrob guy. Like, there's nothing, but then he also is like as flamboyant as like Elton and his costumes and his glasses and his boas and whatever. It's just, I love it. It's a beautiful combination. And then it also comes with this great music too. Like, he's just the full package.
Yeah. It's when, if you watch the, if you haven't watched the video, go check the video out. I think it works as sort of a great art piece.
Yes.
Where I know
like
that
an interpretive dance piece almost, like he's telling a whole story through their dance, through their choreography.
There's lots of, it's one of those videos where it's like, oh no, you probably should watch it a few times and it's enjoyable to watch mm-hmm. repeatedly because you can enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah.
As just sort of pure fun pop performance. But if you want to look deeper and try to see more and peel back the layers, you can.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's the mark of a great music video. And also, I mean, as a complete tangent, but since we're together in the same room, we tend to have these tangents more frequently. You know, I remember this weekend I was falling into a YouTube rabbit hole and I was watching Janet Jackson's video for When I Think of You, a video filmed in 1986 as to appear as one continuous take. But there's only five edits in it, five visible edits. But it's one of those videos that was made that was hoping that you would want to watch it again and again to be like, oh, what about that? Mm-hmm. I missed that. Where's the edit? Where's that? And you want to do that. You want mm-hmm. to watch, you want to do that with music videos. And I think the same thing is happening with Harry, where he's creating more than just, oh, it's just something to have in the background on YouTube. It's like, yep. Oh no, this is an art piece, but it also works as just a piece of pop as well.
Yeah. I don't know how he does it, honestly. He makes it look very simple. He's just meant to be a pop star, I think.
I think it's great that we have someone like Harry Styles because it makes me think of someone like George Michael or something mm-hmm. where it's like a true male pop star that is trying to dabble in different sounds, you know, is a great front man, puts on a great live show, is sort of, you know, ticks all the boxes. In much the same way, we have a bunch of female pop stars that do all of that, too.
Yeah.
And it's so great that, like, Harry is like, yep, I'm going to do this.
Harry's not like this, you know, this is my audience and I'm only for them. He's like, everybody can enjoy this who's interested in enjoying this.
Right.
Please come all that want to.
Yeah.
And as I said, it's the first taste of Harry's third solo album, which is called Harry's House. And it is set for release on May 20th.
May 20th.
Yep.
Goodness.
And next up for Harry, he'll be headlining Coachella, playing Friday night, April 15th in the desert. And we just learned on Monday that Kanye has now backed out of his Sunday headlining slot. So the festival's on the hunt for a new headliner to join Harry and Billie Eilish.
Okay, why did Kanye say why he backed out?
He has not. No, it's right now. It's actually been very like his team says he's backed out. Like, there's no explanation yet. I mean, there's things you can infer. For instance, he said weeks ago, maybe a month ago now,
if Billie didn't apologize
to Travis publicly for like dissing him, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And so she didn't, because she had nothing to apologize for, because she was helping a fan like she's done countless times before and since Astroworld happened. But you could infer that that might be a reason.
Also, by the time you hear this, Kanye could have said, oh, I'm going to be back on.
Maybe. But there's already some rumors floating around. One of the ones I just saw, which is completely unconfirmed, it's from Page Six, is that The Weeknd is being considered, which he's already headlined Coachella. So, you know, I suppose he could plug in.
When is The Weeknd's tour start? His stadium tour starts this year.
Right. So Keith and I were talking about this beforehand, like how you kind of want to plug somebody in who's got a production ready to go. Right.
You can't just swoop in and be like, oh, I'm ready. It's like, no, you would want to bring someone who
his tour doesn't start till September.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's
so he's got a minute, but maybe he can just pull out last year's Super Bowl like set.
you would want to pull in someone who maybe has a residency in Vegas. Mm-hmm. You could just, transport that over.
Silk Sonic opened the Grammys on Sunday, all the Grammys they were nominated for.
Coachella used to be sort of like an alternative rock hip hop thing.
That ship has very much sailed.
Apparently.
Yes, it's very much sailed. I think they tried.
Remember when the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was just about rock music, man?
You know, actually, I did see a suggestion on that front, though. Back in 2020, when the Coachella lineup had been announced already, it was supposed to have been Frank Ocean, Travis Scott, and Rage Against the Machine. And it was never really explained why Rage fell off.
That was supposed to be this year. Oh, no, last year.
It would have been, it's held off. They didn't do it last year either. Oh. So they ended up announcing that Frank Ocean was going to headline next year, so 2023. Oh. Travis fell off. We're assuming, they never said this, but we're assuming because of the Astroworld tragedy. But then they never really said why Rage fell off. Was it just because they weren't in a tour cycle anymore? Because they were going to do like a whole big old tour then.
Right.
So then maybe that just kind of got scrapped if you wanted rock. But then I think a lot of people are looking at diversity now, too, in the sense that we've got Billy and Harry left and we got no hip hop. We have no people of color. It's like that would be weird if they brought Rage in, on that front. So, but I guess it would offer a diversity of genre because you'd have a rock band. So,
well, Silk Sonic.
And there's Silk Sonic. There they are. Oh. They're ready to play wherever you want them at any moment. They can set up the Vegas situation.
Couldn't they just take an existing not headliner?
Yes. So thank you for saying that, because the perfect candidate for that is Doja Cat.
That would be wild if Doja Cat is like headlining Coachella.
Honestly, like,
offense to Doja Cat.
No, but I the Grammy win on Sunday, huge surprise for her. She had a televised award for, I believe it was pop duo group performance.
For Kiss Me More with SZA.
Which there were two parties that thought it was A, either going to go to BTS and Butter and finally give them a Grammy, or it was going to go to Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga and give them an on-screen moment. They did win a Grammy in pre-tell, but give them a televised moment. It ended up going to SZA and Doja. So Doja's won this big old Grammy. She's had this huge album that has had a much longer shelf life than I think anyone expected. Just keeps pumping out Hot 100 singles.
Woman hits number one on the Pop Airplay chart this week, by
the
way.
There we go.
That's her third number one on the Pop Airplay chart from the planet, her album.
There you go. So I think she could do it. Now, also, there's been a lot of headlines about her wanting to quit music recently. So not sure if she's in the mindset right now for wanting such a huge stage. She went down to South America and was doing the whole like Lollapalooza Brazil Latin America tour that Foo Fighters Taylor Hawkins was doing, Miley did, etc. So she's not a stranger to a big stage. I think she could pick up and do it if she answered the call.
Yeah. I think golly, it's just, I can't imagine what it's like trying to program and book these festivals when Coachella is the one that sort of kicks off the entire season. And, you don't want to have the same headliner that's already going to be a headliner at some later show.
Right.
Like, you don't want to have like, oh, ours is going to be the same as...
They've gotten over that a little bit, though, because of what a glut of festivals have come upon us. Like, it used to be they'd have, like, exclusivity clauses and all sorts of stuff, but they've kind of moved away from that, knowing that there's, a finite number of massive A-list stars that can headline, at any given time.
Also, Coachella used to be you could always count on Coachella to have like some like crazy reunion or some act that hasn't played in a gajillion years or some really unique experience. And it feels like, you know,
they've got Swedish House Mafia, which they also talked about how they kind of kept them a little on the, they're not quite a headliner, they're not quite not back burner. They put them on the poster, like in bold face, like coming to, returning to the desert is how they phrased it.
Right.
So a lot of people thought that might have been all along a sort of plan B, or that they were going to play simultaneous to a headliner all along. And now maybe they'll just plug them into Kanye's slot for all we know.
Like maybe they were going to be like in the dance tent in a headlining
at the same
slot
time.
At the same time.
Yeah, which they do a
Kanye
lot. Yeah. All right. There's a lot to talk about there. We'll definitely keep you posted. Heck, who knows if you hear this, because they might announce a new headliner on Monday night before we even put this show up. Who knows?
We're not editing this thing. It's going to go as is.
Moving on to Sunday night's Grammy Awards. John Batiste was the night's biggest winner, taking home 5 prizes from his 11 nominations, including a surprise win for Album of the Year with We Are.
A surprise that shouldn't be a surprise, but continue.
Yeah. By the way, check out our coworker Andrew's article, The 5 Reasons Why It Won. But I think there was just so much chatter around albums that weren't We Are going into it. Like Sour, for instance, Billie's album, even Taylor's album, seeing if she might repeat with Evermore after Folklore. John Batiste won. And 5 prizes altogether. Also, Silk Sonic swept their 3 categories, including Record and Song of the Year for Leave the Door Open.
As Anderson .Paak noted in the final award presentation that they had for the evening, he said,
it's hard to stay humble.
Wait, didn't he say, it's like, this in the industry is what they call a clean sweep.
Yep, he sounded very Vegas when he said
it
that.
It was just so funny.
Yeah.
Both of their acceptance speeches were just so hilarious.
Yes, they were fun.
So, like, even if you were, like, a little bit miffed that maybe your fave didn't win, the sting was taken away by just how sort of, like,
just look at Anderson's hair and then
and how he kept shaking it all
yes,
around.
Sure.
How much of that is his hair?
Oh, that, I mean, that's got to be. That is a wig.
It's
100%
all
wig.
100% wig.
Well, Olivia Rodrigo, she took home 3 awards on Sunday night from her 7 nominations, including the coveted Best New Artist Prize. But many experts, including our own awards editor Paul Grine, thought Olivia could have an even bigger night, perhaps even repeating Billie Eilish's Big 4 sweep of 2020. But Olivia has to settle for only 3 Grammys.
Pop Vocal Album, Best New Artist, and Pop Solo Performance for
yes,
Driver's License.
And only one of the Big 4 there with Best New Artist. And we know it's like ridiculous to look at it that way. It's ridiculous. But we wondered, is this a good night for Olivia? A great night? An okay night? Like, what kind of night is this, do you think, going in with 7 and coming away with 3?
It's a great night.
Yeah, it's a great night.
How in the world could you possibly look at it any other way?
I mean, if you're predicting the Big 4 sweep and people get into your head about the Big 4 sweep and Billie just did the Big 4 sweep.
What if you talk to Paul and he's just like, yeah.
Ooh.
Hey, Paul. Hi.
Sorry, Olivia. No, it's a huge night. I mean, Best New Artist, I think, I would imagine that's got to be the one you hope you go away with, because that's like, I just feel like that's a huge badge of honor walking away with that one.
She's also the 5th woman in a row to win Best New Artist. Before her was Megan Thee Stallion, Billie Eilish, Dua Lipa, and Alessia Cara.
Wow. That's amazing.
Alessia Cara.
So this is where we anoint the next great female artist, apparently, every year.
Pretty great track record as well.
Honestly, yes.
You know, I mean, the Grammys had some interesting choices back in the day.
Yeah.
But it does feel like, at least in recent times, the Best New Artist winner has been a pretty spectacular selection.
Yeah, 100%. You know, one of the things that I thought of when looking at, you know, just how good was Olivia's night, was thinking about how she often is compared to Taylor Swift as, you know, a young singer-songwriter, you know, very personal, diary-like lyrics, you know, plays instruments, etc. Like, just, she's had those comparisons, and it's her idol. She's talked about her inspiration from Taylor. So I wanted to kind of look at what Taylor's first Grammys were like, because then maybe you can draw a line and see, like, okay, how excited should we be about Olivia's night or not? And I was surprised to look back and see that at her very first Grammys, which was the 50th annual Grammy Awards in 2008, Taylor was nominated for only 1 prize that night.
Ooh, can I guess?
Yes.
So is this from her self-titled debut album?
Yes.
I'm going to guess country solo performance or country female performance if the category existed then for Tim McGraw.
Great guess, Keith, but...
Wrong?
Best New Artist.
Oh, well,
and that's
okay.
It. Not a single country prize. Not a single country nomination.
Tells you what country thought of Taylor.
In the early days, yeah, because these are genre voters making those choices.
At least the country voter committee people that are part of the Recording Academy.
Correct.
Which is very different. It doesn't have the same crossovers like, say, the CMAs or the ACM Awards.
But she was one of those Best New Artist nominees that was among only five nominations.
She did not win Best New Artist.
She did not win. Actually, who won? I didn't look that up.
Was that 2008, 2009?
Yeah, do you want to guess that, too?
I bet you it was like... I want to say, was that the Esperanza Spalding year? No, that was the year that Esperanza Spalding won against Justin Bieber and Drake. I bet you Ashley Taylor was probably up against someone really significant. Amy Winehouse, maybe?
Amy Winehouse. Nice work.
Good guess, Keith.
So that category, it was Amy Winehouse who won, Feist, Ledisi, Paramore, and Taylor Swift.
Solid,
speaking of future lady superstars, all right there. Was nominated and lost in that one single category. So already we're talking about Olivia's Knight going in with seven nominations for her first year, right?
Yeah.
Then if you look at her next Grammys, which was in 2010.
For Fearless. Oh, boy.
Taylor saw way more action. All of a sudden having eight nominations with that album and four wins. So she won half of the Grammys she went in for, including her very first Big Four category for Album of the Year.
Yeah.
For Fearless. So, so to say the least, I feel like Olivia had an amazing night getting that Best New Artist win, getting two other wins as well. If you look at somebody like Taylor losing Best New Artist, not getting any of the other nominations, I think Olivia's going to be okay is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Olivia is, you know, there might be a certain amount of maybe relief, maybe in her mind where...
A little too much pressure if she had been like the Big Four sweep girl?
Yeah, there was a look on her face when she won either Pop Vocal or Best New Artist. And she had this look when the camera hit her and she was getting up from her chair. It almost looked like that eye roll of like, oh, God, like I've won this other thing. And maybe in her mind she was thinking, is this going to be a repeat of like Billie from a few years ago where Billie kept winning everything?
Right.
Or like when Adele keeps winning everything and then it becomes like... Hey, girl, you just won everything and like you took the air out of the room and like you never want to be that person.
Yeah.
And so maybe somewhere in the back of her mind, she's like, maybe it was fine. It was okay.
No, a little pressure off.
But she still walked out a winner with multiple awards and it didn't look like she was, you know, hogging the spotlight.
Yeah. No, totally.
And it's like they have nothing to do with it. You know?
Well, and I'm sure she saw, I mean, not to just keep harping on the Taylor comparison, but I'm sure she's seen throughout Taylor's career when she was the, like, win every award girl and pretend to be surprise girl,
right. There
was backlash to that, you know? So, yeah, like we said, Olivia's going to be fine. She had a huge night, and I'm excited to hear what Olivia's Fearless sophomore album is going to be like.
It's crazy to think that it's been over a year. No. Has it been a year? No. Has
her
been a year since Sour
drivers,
came out?
It's been exactly a year, like last Thursday.
Since Sour came out?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, Driver's License was January and Sour was April.
I wonder, like, how long will we wait for the next album?
Mm-hmm.
Like, has she already been talking about that she's working on new music? I wonder, will it come before the end of the year? Will she be up in contention for next year's Album of the Year?
If I'm her with this tour coming... I want to just take a breather after that tour, wouldn't you think? It's been a whirlwind. She has been on a roller coaster and probably wants to get off and have some sense of whatever normal is for her.
Yeah, but now you're doing the I've got to do the tour in support of this, much like Future Nostalgia Tour was in support of an album that came out 2 years ago.
Yeah, well, at least she's a little bit quicker than that.
Should we wait?
Olivia could... Huh? Could go to Coachella.
Yeah, sure. Should we talk? Was there more about the Grammys that we should talk about?
I figured there's so much we could talk about with the Grammys that we should like narrow it down to the one thing. But if you would like to bring anything else up, I feel like there's too much to talk about.
I mean, I think the the elephant in the room is the fact that John Batiste, who is an artist who does not get radio airplay, is not at the top of your streaming playlists, is not any, he is not someone that's ever had an album in the top 40 of the Billboard 200.
Oh, I mean, Gary updated his article about how, you know, albums of the year and records of the year have performed on our Billboard 200 and on the Hot 100, mm-hmm. and John Batiste was the, like, lowest performer of yeah. album of the year winners yeah. of all time. Yeah.
Yes, his album, which won album of the year, and it was called We Are, debuted and peaked at number 86 on the Billboard 200 and spent 1 week on the chart. We assume that it should probably have some measurable gain this week in the wake of the Grammy Awards.
I would think.
How big that will be, we do not know. Because
I've already given it a curiosity listen. I hadn't listened before the Grammys, and then I did after the Grammys.
The only place I've heard any parts of this album in the past were on NPR, like in the past.
Yeah.
Like when I listened to KCRW in Los Angeles, like, I had heard interviews with him. He might have been on, like, some of their weekend programming. I've heard a few of the songs.
I think to a lot of people, he's Stephen Colbert's band leader.
Yes.
Like, and then that's the end of the list.
If but that.
As we mentioned earlier, he had 11 nominations going into Sunday's show. And sitting through that pre-tell, those nominations were scattered across all sorts of genres.
Wackadoodle categories.
He had one in jazz. He had one for the Soul score soundtrack, right. along with Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross.
I want to say, like, instrumental composition.
Yeah, there
or
might
something.
Have been, like, a classical something or other there, yeah. too, in addition to We Are for Album of the Year, like, and an R&B one, too. Like, he literally was scattered across four or five genres, which the album is scattered across four or five genres, too.
He's an eclectic artist, and I think the vast majority of people that were watching the Grammy Awards, if you were watching the Grammy Awards, learned about him for the very first time last night through that performance of Freedom, the song from the album, which was nominated for Record of the Year, which was a pretty electric performance, and through him winning Album of the Year. What happened with him at the Grammys was what the Grammys have done in the past, where they effectively could make someone through an award show.
I think
make their career or change the trajectory of their career.
There are names that we know because of the Grammys, and those names include, you already mentioned, Esperanza Spalding, who won last night too. By the way, she
really?
Like, yeah, she won, and Paul did an article about her, like, you know, basically now she's won more Grammys than any of those people she was up against for Best New Artist, because she's been winning these genre Grammys this, you know, consistently since that win over Drake and Justin Bieber.
Though Bonnie Raitt was obviously a noted artist before the 1990 Grammy Awards, the 1990 Grammy Awards, where she won Album of the Year for Nick of Time, absolutely changed the course of her career. Norah Jones was already a star through the release of Come Away With Me, but the Grammy Awards were like the cherry on top and the coronation that further cemented her. And she talked about it last week on the show. So the Grammys can do that,
yep.
where they can suddenly, like, reveal a talent that has been in the ether or been in the industry for a while that maybe the masses didn't know about, because the traditional means of consuming music through radio or streaming playlists, or back in the day, MTV or VH1, the gatekeepers never gave some artists who were beloved and critically loved by the members of the Recording Academy, meaning the people who actually make music for a living professionally, maybe always liked them.
Yeah.
And maybe they never got the shine. So it'll be interesting to see what happens to John Batiste's career after this week. Not, you know, Olivia
if
obviously
nothing,
is going to be fine, but
if
John Batiste.
If nothing else, We Are is going to see a bump.
Right.
So we will, you know, come back next week and we will tell you all about it, or see Keith's article on Sunday.
You know, John Batiste is demanding a raise right now from Stephen Colbert
right.
and CBS. You now have a 5-time Grammy Award-winning artist as your band leader.
Seriously. Crazy. And, you know, it was a good night for band leaders, late night band leaders, because Questlove also won for, you know, music film for Summer Soul a week after winning the Oscar for the movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah, apparently just this is a good gig for a talented musician, end up as a late night band leader, obviously.
So should we move on now?
Yes.
Okay. Well, now it's time for the chart stat of the week. And really, it's just another quiz, Katie. And it's funny, Katie and I do work from a script, but a lot of this is sort of off the cuff. This part of the script I did not actually give to her. Oh. So she's looking at a big blank part in her script.
Yes, I am.
If she's looking at it, she might be doing something else. I mean, she's literally in front of me. But anyway. All right. So, Katie, we were talking earlier about Album of the Year winners and how we had noted that Jon Batiste had not made the top 10 yet on the Billboard 200 with an album that had only reached number 86 so far. So I thought it would be fun to play a quiz, Katie, asking you which of the following Album of the Year winners did not hit number one on the Billboard 200.
This is a quiz, Katie, for how well she remembers the article she edited by Gary last night.
Well, then,
the answer is probably not that well because I edited, 50 articles yesterday. So this will be a real test.
Okay, so which of these albums did not hit number one either before or after it won the Grammy for Album of the Year?
Okay.
So we have Natalie Cole's Unforgettable with Love, which won in 1992. Bruno Mars, 24K Magic, or 24 Karat Magic, which won in 2018. Phil Collins, No Jacket Required, which won in 1986. Billy Joel, 52nd Street, which won in 1980. And Celine Dion's Falling Into You, which won in 1997. Now, I have the feeling that because you edited this and because some of these names might be more familiar than others, you may know the answer immediately.
I don't.
What?
I don't know the answer immediately.
Okay. Well, then.
So I'm guessing. I'm going to go Bruno Mars. Is that right?
You are correct. So Bruno Mars' album debuted and peaked at number two and spent four non-consecutive weeks at number two.
I remember that. What was it behind, do you remember?
Metallica's Hardwired to Self-Destruct.
Yep. Yes, that's the only reason I remembered it debuting at number two. That's the only reason I guessed that. Okay.
You know, the Silk Sonic album also debuted at number two.
But it ended up going to number one, didn't it?
Nope.
It hasn't yet.
Hasn't yet.
Oh, my goodness. That'll be interesting.
Dun, dun, dun. just to recap the others, Natalie Cole's album spent 5 weeks at number one in the summer of 1991 before it won Album of the Year the following year. Phil Collins' album spent 7 weeks at number one in 1985 before it won Album of the Year in 1986. Billy Joel's album spent 8 weeks at number one in late 1978 and early 1979. Ooh, that was a late 1978 release that ultimately won in 1980. Ooh, that's an interesting turn of the calendar. And Celine Dion's album spent 3 weeks at number one in October of 1996. Before it went on to win Album of the Year in 1998. So there you have it, a little combo platter of Quiz Katie, Chart Stat, and Grammy Flashback.
Yes. Sorry I didn't remember your article better, Gary.
What?
But I got it right, just not because of that.
How far back does this article go? Did it go all the way back to the beginning?
As far as I know, I guess I don't. Let's look.
Well, it's not that important.
Okay. Well, he updated it. I think he started it last year and updated it last night after the wins.
It's funny. I have a spreadsheet that I did a while back that goes back to 1990 where, trying to track, where the Album of the Year winner peaked before the show and then after the show and what was its gain. And it's so wild how, on what day the Grammys fell on. Was it a Sunday? Was it a Monday? Was the tracking week Friday to Thursday, or was the tracking week Monday to Sunday?
Right.
Because that's what the tracking week used to be. And then every few years, there's a new wrench thrown in where now we have streams, or there was digital downloads, or, physical, you can't compare to how something reacted in 1999 or 2009
right.
to 2022, because the way people consume and listen to music is so different.
Yeah.
Every 5 years, it radically changes now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've reached the end of our big show. What song should we go out on?
One of my surprise favorite performances at the Grammys on Sunday was J Balvin with In Da Ghetto. Did you see that performance?
Yeah.
The arm choreography for that. And then the song just was ringing through my head. Calvin was singing it, which is amazing, my four-year-old. So I think we should go out on J Balvin's In Da Ghetto.
It's built around a sample of, that whole In Da Ghetto.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 ghetto.
Yes.
That's a sample.
Is that why I know that so well? Because I've already heard it before J Balvin.
I don't know who the artist is, but I'm pretty sure the song is called just In Da Ghetto.
It's just so good. It was, and I just loved the way they lit the whole thing. And he was dressed in head to toe red, while all the dancers, they were dressed in white with blue Lights. Yeah. I loved it so much.
The song samples the 1993 song In Da Ghetto by David Morales and Bad Yard.
Amazing.
Like the part that was like that kept playing.
The earworm.
The earworm part. Mm-hmm. That's in the original song. It's a direct lift from it.
You have to go right back and listen to that too.
So should
we should go out on J Balvin.
The J Balvin version. All right. See you guys next time.
Bye.
Yo solo sé que montaron.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.